Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Williamson is not here, but Mike Cosentino is right here on Democratic Perspective. And we got a good show today. We're going to try. This is going to try to unravel the onion here about charter schools and educational management organizations and student tuition organizations. All the things that have happened to. Here we are 20 years down the road with charter schools, and your son, daughter, granddaughter, grandson may go to a charter school and just love it. My granddaughter does, down in Scottsdale. But there's a dark side to all of this, and many of us who spend time noticing Arizona education and education at large knew this and know this. What started as sort of the whole choice idea, and certainly that was one of the conservative mantras of the last 20 or 30 years, choice. And at the public schools, I remember Governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, went around asking people if they ever had a bad experience with their school. And, of course, everybody at some point or another had a bad experience with their school. And, you're in school for 12 years in K-12 and beyond. And so he would collect these stories and use that as a justification to the charter school.
Maybe we should do the same thing with the legislature. Anybody had a bad experience with any decision made by the legislature?
On a daily basis. But so Lisa Graham Keegan, and so we've kind of pegged it at 95, the superintendent of instruction here in Arizona, certainly got this ball rolling. And Arizona really was leading edge on this, actually, for a long time. I think our guest is going to give us a statistic of about 600 charter schools. Some of us just see this as a great big sucking hole of taking funds away from public schools. But the intent was that charter schools would be these wonderful educational laboratories free of government regulation where you could innovate and really do the important things that can take people that love teaching and let them do what they do best and free of the regulations. Of course, that was bullcrap. What has happened is they've become financial a method, a way to serve, to get public money into your private pocket. And people have, and after 20 years, they've got it down to in science. Our guest is Jan Dick this morning. She is
Jan Nichols
this morning. She is that was an important fact we should have talked about last night. yes. I've known Jan for a long time, and she's got a long career in education, and she is a registered Democrat, and does go around and spread some of this information that she's going to share with us.
Registered Democrat that automatically disqualifies her from Arizona. She can have no opinions, right? Especially on education.
But we aren't going to focus on that this morning, as I would love to, but Jan doesn't. She believes, and she's absolutely correct, that the credibility here is going to be in what's happening to your tax money, ladies and gentlemen. What's going on with that? So, Jan Nichols, what do you got?
And I would like to say that I don't think that it really is a Democrat or Republican issue. It's a money issue. And the money is the important thing that you don't want to be paying into the public schools to have it siphoned off for somebody's real estate investment. And there are many real estate investments. Albert Shanker was the one who, from the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, who actually began this movement, and he repudiated it many years later.
Right.
Because it was not a source for helping dropouts. It wasn't a source for helping those children who were a little different than the run-of-the-mill student. You know, they were different. They needed different education.
And Shankar was the idealist, you know, that believed teachers, if they had more, if want of a better term, power in institutions, that everybody would be better off, and certainly mostly the students. But I
always go back, because I'm a history teacher, I always go back and I say, where did this begin? How did it start? And what is going on? The U.S. has 6,400 plus charter schools with 2.5 million students, supported by upwards of $20 billion in tax funds annually and multi-million dollars from foundations. In 2011 and 2012, 42% of the nation's public charter schools students were enrolled in privately operated charter schools. Based on the trends and the growth of educational management organizations, it is estimated that by 2016, more than half of the nation's charter school students will be enrolled in schools owned and operated by the educational management organizations.
Well, you're already giving us, a big new insight into what's going on. We're kind of used to charter schools and district-run charter schools and privately-run charter schools, and charters are public schools. We, you know, that's, you know, some people use the word technically, and they are technically public schools. They certainly use public money, and that's, for most of us, that's where the definition begins and ends. If you're using public money, you're a public school. If you're using tax dollars to support your, to pay your teachers, to pay your rent, to pay, to buy buildings. So if people have figured out, and what has happened after 20 years is that, that nice little cadre of dedicated teachers with a, to go off and try and take some students and try some educational and be aware of what it takes to get into college and to how the brain works and how education works and how learning works. $20 billion got the attention of exactly what Jan is going to describe here, that we think it got the attention of money people, that, you know, hedge funds and the money behind the money, in the United States. These are people that run things. So, I just want to make the connection between your charter school down the road and educational management organizations. They have found a way to mass produce this and to make scads of money.
They're chain stores.
There you go. Thank you.
They're super chain stores. They are not your...
That's why we invited you.
Yeah. Well, and the reason they can do this is that there were two laws that were passed in 1990. Federal government passed the employment-based EB-5. And I'll explain that in a minute. And in 2000, they passed a new market tax credit bill. Now, this opened the gates, but not right away. The charter schools began, and they didn't quite notice this. When the new market credit is federal government provides 39% of the tax credit to blighted or low-income areas, but that not necessarily looked at that closely. That is in addition to the state charters.
You mean the income and the blighted part isn't exactly, there's no means test for that.
They don't go out and say, is this really a blighted area?
Yeah. One person's blighted area might be another person's country.
Right.
Club.
So
yeah.
Sedona might be a little different from maybe, say, Guadalupe.
Maybe.
Just a little different. So in addition to the 39% tax credit by the federal government, they also get tax credits, incentives, county funds, and all this from the state entities.
Hasn't that even been abused to channel funds towards private schools as well?
Private and religious schools.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
So in other words, public tax dollars are going to support private schools and charter schools without any oversight.
There is no oversight. In the state of Arizona, there is no oversight. Basically, what the charter schools do is they present a budget, they send the budget into the state, and nobody actually looks at it. And there is no vehicle for if they spend the money the way they say they're going to spend the money.
And that's really the biggest thing, I think, that we're saying here this morning in our 45 minutes, is that, okay, you know, the charter school idea came, it's here, we're dealing with it, but boy, somebody's got to be looking.
Well, look at the scrutiny given to public schools,
yeah,
you know, over what is in-classroom dollars versus non-classroom dollars. You know, that was a big discussion with Ducey and the legislature this year. So right. there's all sorts of accountability for public schools. You know, we test them constantly to find out how the kids are performing, allegedly, through the test, and and then hold the schools accountable if the test results are not where people think they should be. Yet when it comes to public and private schools, there is no such accountability, and there's no kind of hypocritical about it is there's no discussion about accountability with them.
And there's no discussion because we go into this, Jan, because the legislators, I guess there are no conflict.
Many are connected to the charter schools.
Yeah, they're making
schools.
Money hands over fist. So it's like honor among thieves, or the thin blue line, or however you want. These guys won't. You got members of the, and what we're talking about here is members of the legislature are heavily involved in making profits off of charter schools, and therefore the Arizona legislature is real reluctant to bring up any restrictions or any regulations, especially in a Republican legislature. The word regulation is a swear word.
Well, in our legislature, it seems that public schools are socialism.
Well, that's right. That's where you learn to become a liberal. Because
right on the verge of communism.
But we're going to get back to our guest here, because she's got all kinds of cool stuff here.
Well, one of the things that has happened is that the investors came in, the domestic investors came in, put down their monies, were given 39% for the federal government. And people like Bill Gates, the Waltons, Koch brothers, Rupert Murdoch, those are all people who came in and decided that they would be able to. And I'll give you an example in a minute from the Walton Foundation. And then what they do is they come in. They don't intend to live there. They don't intend to stay there. The community is no concern of theirs. They then hire an educational management organization. That educational management organization runs the nonprofit. Now, in Arizona, for instance, if you have BASIS, which is supposed to be the number one school in the nation, you have BASIS was established by a professor from the University of Arizona. So far, so good. They established a school, and they ran it from 2003, I believe, until 2009. And they ran it as a nonprofit. And then they decided to establish a for-profit management company, which would then take over all the running, maintenance, hiring, all the buying and selling, the contracts, subcontracting, all that. Well, they put themselves in charge of, so they run the management company. They collect a salary from the nonprofit and the profit. And their profits have soared. There are three levels of profits. Their profits have gone up into the multi-millions. Mm-hmm. The cash on hand is $7 million plus that we can find out. We can only find out by means of connecting dots that we look at, because they do not have to disclose. Right. There's no auditing that goes on, so we don't know. We just know how much, we do know that most of these for-profits, their for-profit and their non-profit can be the same people.
We want to say real quick, just for those that really have no understanding, that the money flows into the both the profit and the nonprofit charter schools that are public schools via the students. You get so many dollars per student. It's tax dollars. And it just flows into the schools that way. And then what happens in a traditional public school was that there was all kinds of scrutiny and school boards and things and accountants and all kinds of regulations and a whole state structure that oversaw schools. This doesn't exist in the charter school, which has made them so profitable. You told me that these guys can double their, and this is why it's become such a popular investment for the Waltons and others with a lot of money, is because you can double your money in 7 years.
You can double your money, and it's done by real estate.
Ah.
And they can acquire those buildings. Some of those public buildings can be acquired when they collapse a public school. They can acquire those, and then they can make money off of the real estate venture. But the normal thing is to double their money in 7 years. They also produce that as a flyer and an email out to attract investors.
All right.
So
this should come as no surprise to anyone. When the state of Arizona's primary functions are education and incarceration.
That's
the
right.
Two biggest parts of the budget.
That's all that's left.
And you know, that money until charter schools was kept out of, you know, big
private
money
hands.
Interest, away
that's
from
right.
big money interest. And when you look at that and you see the two places where the most money in the state goes, the big money interests have got to find a way to tap into that. And so that's why we have private prisons, and that's why we have this crap going on.
That's it.
Well, they also say that this is the most reliable form of investment because there's a high demand for it, and it's a constant demand.
And there's no measurement.
People keep having children.
To be clear, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about buying real estate with tax dollars and then selling it for profit. I mean, now there's a lot of obfuscation here. And if one of these charter school lawyers was sitting in this room right now and I let him get near the microphone, he would give me a lot of obfuscating details. Jan's going to try
three-card Monty.
Exactly. Three-card Monty, exactly. Very popular game when I was in high school. I lost a lot of money. But go ahead.
Well, and some of the information that you get is propaganda. For instance, Bill Gates and his foundation do have charters. They have founded charters. And I really do believe that Bill Gates is somewhat honorable. I think that
good
he is really
certainly.
Good intentions. I think that he is actually thinking that this is going to improve. But he did put out a movie called Waiting for Superman, which was very anti-public education, very anti-public education. And it reinforced the idea that public schools were failing. Public schools, and if you ask me, did we need to improve? Yes. Did we need to involve? Yeah. Evolve? Absolutely. You need to evolve and change. And you need to do this, but you also have to have money to do it. So when
right.
you gut those programs because people are leaving. I told this story yesterday that I was a gifted facilitator in the biggest school district in Arizona. And I had a program, a gifted program. It was a marvelous gifted program. We were heading for really good things. We had a parent group of about 35 parents who put out a newsletter. We were really doing some beautiful things. The legislature then gutted all gifted funds going to the public school system. My program broke down. I was switched to a regular classroom. There was no more gifted in this particular district, no funding for it. People kept trying to do it. And the idea was that gifted will always take care of themselves. Well, gifted parents tend to be involved in their children's lives. And these gifted parents and children decided that well, they're not going to fund it. There are no programs except AP, which I do not think is the same thing as a gifted program. Then they go to the charters, because BASIS really only accepts gifted
students.
Children.
Isn't that
And
amazing?
They are gifted.
Yeah.
And they get the publicity. And those children will go out and change the world. They will.
And they also get the tax credits from the parents.
They do.
You know, more than, you know, any public.
So you got the tax money flowing, and then the parents are allowed to donate and get a huge tax credit.
And in some cases,
they have the money to do it.
Such as BASIS, they are really pressured to give a $1,500 check annually.
I see.
So that isn't your average child, your average student's parents. In a public school, I taught in a socioeconomically downturned school.
Yes.
Let's say, I'm trying to be politically correct here.
Well, some of us think that's all of Phoenix, but go ahead.
And it was a depressed area, and I had an extremely gifted young man, and he, of course, his mother worked. There was no father because the father had been killed in an accident. They were unable to transfer because they just didn't have the money or the wherewithal, because there's no transportation either. They wouldn't take him from, say, South Phoenix to the inner. Now, they are building schools down there now.
No.
So they will take those students.
Yes.
But at the time.
The timing, yeah. And that's all
but
about timing.
They will find a way to educate their bright children.
Good.
They will.
They will. And they have through the private charter schools.
And Rupert Murdoch is also one who helped influence this parent trigger ability here with his won't turn back.
Won't back down. Yeah, as the study started coming out, that charter schools were not innovative. They were not a great use of money. That they were, money was going to. I mean, we're not breaking the story on Democratic perspective this morning. This has been known for a while.
There's a study from Stanford University several years ago measuring charter schools against public schools. And they found there's essentially no difference in the success of children from one version of school to another.
But the only difference what Murdoch would support would be that in a charter school, your parents will have a choice to not have their children rub elbows with brown kids or kids of a different religion or whatnot. And so that's where the won't back down. And he's very good at coming up with these phrases that the I'm going to call them knee-jerk conservatives love. Won't back down, that's it. He'll get people to sign up. They don't even care what it is.
That's my biggest problem with charter schools is that in the state that I lived in before Arizona, they were used to accelerate the white flight from the inner city.
Right.
Under the auspices, I'm not going to move my child to the suburbs to get away from black people. I'm going to move my child to the suburbs to get a better education in a charter school.
That's right.
It was always the excuse.
And the other thing is that really when they talk about choice, there is no choice. When they go to a charter school, they really can't object to anything. If they go to a meeting, a board meeting or something, and they object to something, or if their child, let's say, behaves inordinately, they just don't behave correctly in the school, they are gone. They do their objections by walking, and that's the only choice they have. There is no due process. They do not. If the school doesn't want the child there, they do not go. Then where do they go? They go back to the public school.
And there's lots of evidence. There was a study done recently in Minnesota where they found that children of color were suspended or expelled at a much higher rate for the same infractions as white students. And so this is being used to, we now are more segregated than at any time since the civil rights movement. So this is being used to do that.
Well, and it's true. Even in my experience, if a student doesn't have an advocate, whether that's a parent, a staff member, or someone, the authorities that be, regardless of how their intentions, will run roughshod over them. And we can do statistics here. I love them. But very often students of color or don't have anyone to advocate for them.
Well, one of the things that happens in suspensions is coincidentally they tend to happen around testing time. And those children then go back to the public schools. And the suspension rate is, I don't have the study right on the tip of my tongue here, but the study did suspension rates for public schools versus the charter schools and found that it was astronomically higher in charter schools. And again, at certain times of the year, higher than others.
Remember the so-called Houston miracle that led to No Child Left Behind. The principal or a superintendent of schools in Houston became the Secretary of Education and brought his whole procedure to, you know, supposedly to the national audience. But they later found out that the reason that Houston was schools had become more successful was they were suspending the low performing students and disqualifying them from high school. So suddenly those schools were performing better.
Well, sure, you have those gifted students, or at least, you know, average to gifted, and those are the only ones you're testing. And that's a tried and true method for many years. And this guy, like the charter schools, has institutionalized it and made it on a wholesale basis.
The hedge funds are also starting a new revolution, whichever. And what they do, and we have these wonderful hedge fund investors are putting, like David Tepper, who's Appaloosa Management, has put in $3.5 billion in 2013 alone. And Stephen Cohen, SAC Capital Advisor, put $10 million in charter schools alone. What they are tending to do now is not have a brick-and-mortar building, not have any services, and maybe not have any certified teachers. And they may have upwards of 2,000 students, whatever, and it's all online. It's all a curriculum that is established, and it is established in the student's home.
Wow.
What do you think of online education, especially when it pertains to high school and
below?
Below to me it seems like you're sacrificing much of what I cherished about high school is the interaction with other students.
Well, I think the socialization is absolutely important. You see this with some children, well, with most children who are, I'm going to say something really controversial now, homeschooled. They lack socialization skills, and most of those children decide to go to high school and go to a public school because they need those. I wanted to change the direction a little bit because I think this next part is important, and whereas people may have heard the other things, they may not have ever heard this. There was a law passed in 1990, EB-5, the Immigration Investment Act, which they were trying to get foreign investors to come over to the United States. One of the first investors, and at first this investment opportunity, not too many people took advantage of it. The Chinese came in, and the Chinese in Arizona came in and bought the Biltmore Hotel. And that was one of the first EB-5s.
An Arizona landmark.
And what it does is it allows investors to come in and for $1 million, and whoever puts in that $1 million, or in the urban areas, they can come in and get the 39%. They can get all those incentives. And in the rural areas, $500,000. And for that, the conditions are, and these are basically the only condition. They have to be financially viable. Okay, they have to have money. For this, they have to provide 10 full-time jobs. Full-time and their definition is 35 hours
not
a week.
So it's not completely devoid of some requirement.
Right. For this, the immigrants who come in, the immigrant investors come in, they get green cards for each person in their family.
So by investing in charter schools, they get and providing 10 jobs, they get green cards.
Yeah, and that's the leap.
For
years, they did not go into that because they were busy buying up hotels and spas and golf courses and all those leisurely activities.
Sure.
And then somebody looked at it and said, I think it was Rupert Murdoch, who said, gee, look at this. We got a whole bunch of things that can go into charters and we can make lots of money. So the foreigners began to come in, and they come in at the rate, at the last count, it's 10,000, we think, 10,000 per year are coming in since they started coming in around 1993. Those figures are off a little bit because in the first years they didn't come in droves.
Sure.
Okay. Now, apply that to the charter schools. The second largest charter school chain is owned by one investor, and that is, his name is Fethullah Gulen. He is a Turkish intellect. He's written, I think, 60 books. He has the second largest chain in the United States. The first one is KIPP, Knowledge is Power Program, which is sponsored by the Waltons. Fethullah Gulen is a Muslim extremist. These are not my words. I am not Islamophobic, just to make that for the record. He lives in exile in Pennsylvania. He is the head of the Gulen Movement, which is a covert operation throughout the world. They want to go in and do substantially take over in certain areas. This man has 147 schools in the United States, over 60,000 students.
Wow.
And the quote that I always look back at, and it's hard to, I don't know Turkish politics. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I've been trying to read up on Turkish politics, and I'm not sure I get all the things that are happening there. But there is a warrant for his arrest. He lives in Sailorsville, Pennsylvania, where he has a compound, not unlike some other compounds that we know of. He has acolytes that he trains to go out and spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quotes that I was able to keep coming across was, the reason why he concentrates on the United States is that he can have the government provide all of the money for his charter schools, and it's all paid for by taxpayers. So the quote is, you must move in the arteries of the system without anyone noticing our existence until you reach all the power centers.
Uh-huh.
So
any sense of what it's like to be one of the 60,000 students? You know, what is he graduating? Is it, if he's moving within the arteries of the U.S. system, then he must have a K-12 system.
And there are, I believe, 9 in Arizona.
Holy cow, wowie.
And basically, mainly, the board is made up of men. The teachers are men, mainly. There might be one or two females in the staff, but I did not see them. They teach Turkish, and the concentration is on math and science. The schools here in Arizona are Paragon Science, the Sonoran Science Academies, and the parent company is Accord Institute of Educational Research, and the EMO is Daisy Educational Research.
These are the Gulen schools in Arizona.
Yes. So they have the same things that other charter schools do. They have a kind of an authoritarian behavior code.
Right.
They have uniforms. They have strict hours. And again, The other thing about it is that economically, they do not purchase anything or subcontract to any kind of company that is not consistent with the Gulen movement.
So they're not going down to McGraw-Hill and buying their textbooks?
No.
Right.
They're not going down the street and buying anything local.
Huh.
They're not buying anything on a national level. And all the profits are plowed back into the Gulen movement.
So he's built this empire. So the vendors that supply the institutions are also...
Yes.
Well, there you go.
And all the profits go back into the Gulen movement.
That's the way to do it. It's what I'm looking for.
So the federal spending to launch these charter schools has ballooned from $4.5 million to more than $235 million. And in fiscal year 2016, the federal government has said they are going to increase it by 48%.
They're increasing funding to charter schools.
To charter schools.
By 48%. Yes. The legislature loves the whole choice movement.
And this is in addition to many of the states, and I am not sure this is in Arizona, but this is, they provide $22 billion to states for improvements, let's say, into the school structure. So let's say you have painting, girding that needs to be done to the structure. You have an aging building. In order to do that, they allocate $22 billion throughout the United States. And as I said, I'm not sure whether or not Arizona has allocated that or not.
So, but just before we get accused of fear-mongering as much as everyone else, people are looking at them. Now, I haven't read much. I did see something on CNN, it was 60 Minutes, on the Gulen schools. But there are government organizations that are taking a look at them.
There are many. Some of the state auditors back in Pennsylvania, some in Florida, there are court cases going forward. The major problem here is there is no concentrated line that goes, comprehensive list of how the funding is spent. They don't know from the federal government to when they allocate it. They do not have any information how it's spent. The accounting is all done by the U.S. Immigration Service.
Of course, the experts at accounting.
I think they have other things on their mind.
Yeah, right.
But that is who does the accounting.
Which is under Homeland Security,
so,
by the way.
Through corruption, fraud, mismanagement, we are talking about billions and billions of dollars at the federal level, which are unaccounted for, which I have said often, I didn't even give my son allowance that I didn't ask him what he was spending it for. And we're having billions and billions of dollars with the federal government unaccounted for, billions and billions of dollars in the state government that's never audited, never. There is a chance that we can get some legislation passed in the next session. We have some very courageous Democrats who are going to try and put a bill forward that adds two words to a bill, to an initiative that says that the public schools are accountable, public schools are accountable, and charters.
That's it. Just add those two words
and
to the
charters.
To the regulation, to the law.
It'll likely never happen because, you know, this whole charter thing is part of the
what I'm saying.
Sacrosanct free market it's private, you know, privately held, privately run with public money. What could be better
as far as a
free market Republican?
As noted by Murdoch's mantra of, you know, that he realizes or they realize that people are taking a look at this and saying, hey, isn't that right? And that's so, you know, never... go back.
I go back to private prisons. You know, it's the same thing. We couldn't touch that because it's free market capitalism and it's privately run.
I love the audacity.
Dollars.
We see this through everything. I mean, this is conservative. You have conservative government people throwing money. I mean, this is just at conservative movements and not requiring any accountability. Now, do you want to talk about 2.5 trillion lost in Iraq and Afghanistan? Do you want to talk about private prisons in Arizona and statewide and Pennsylvania, by the way, another huge where the incentive is to have Americans in jail? Because the more Americans you have in jail, well, guess what? The more profit private prisons make. Same thing with students. The more students you have in your school, the more money you're going to make. But the less money you put out for teachers, you put them under a headset, or you put them in front of a computer that, you know, you can buy for $98. And that's the method. And it is a great plan. It is a profit-making deal.
Treating students and prisoners as commodities.
Probably not a good idea.
Source.
We had Chan Campbell on the show, an Arizona legislator, and he did a good job of, and it applies to in 2015. We probably had him a couple of years ago when he was still in the legislature. And he said, you know, there are things that probably should be privatized. You know, government functions, and he talked about food service. You know, government may not do the best job at food service, but there are things like education, like incarceration, and that, you know, should have the oversight of a legislative body, should have the oversight of a governor, and not what we have going on. This is truly the Wild West.
One of the things that's happening, too, it's not all doom and gloom. Washington State Supreme Court recently ruled that public money is going to charters and flowing through charters is not constitutional.
This is huge.
And so they now are rerouting things and starting to do things. It probably will be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. Nevada also has litigation that they're putting in to make it unconstitutional or have it ruled unconstitutional. The other thing is that it is so important that people get informed. It's so important that people go to the board meetings because they're taking over the local school boards and they're putting people who are very pro-charter into the school districts, into the school board meetings. So there are some things that are happening. But awareness is the most important thing. Education is the most important thing. And we have to keep aware. We have to be
absolutely
aware.
The Washington thing, and it was the state. So to be clear, the state Supreme Court of Washington said charter schools are unconstitutional. Nevada has litigation beginning. Those people are starting to wake up. Are charter schools unconstitutional? Yeah, probably not. But the way they're being run, the way they're being subverted, the way they're being twisted by some of these for-profit EMOs, educational management organizations, they can be and can become unconstitutional. And certainly that, bless Washington for seeing that first. I'm hoping that it starts to spread. We want to thank...
A word from our sponsor is we're sponsored in part by Democrats of the Red Rocks, who have a picnic coming up, their annual picnic, October 11th. It's a Sunday at Living Springs Park.
Living Springs in Oak Creek Canyon, a beautiful, beautiful spot. Please come up.
And it's this year it's going to include a lot of eco displays.
We have scads of candidates that come to meet, if you want to meet some of your representatives. Yes, we do have the Verde River Valley Nature Organization is going to have a display there and some discussion. I do the cooking, along with, Bill Timmerman. Please, you can get this show. Please come to the canyon for the picnic. Come and listen on vbid.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.